testing, yep.
Got it, but,
yeah, that would be fantastic.
You know, when you get a chance and sit down.
We got to turn the microphone.
Absolutely.
You know, I've worked with Brittany on some stuff in junior league.
That, the barbecue and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But we can do something else.
Can you go again, sir?
Okay, great. That'd be great. All right, then, I will definitely get in touch.
No, no.
Do it.
And I guess I've got...
Mine's not on.
I think those are down. I don't think these are on up here.
Hello, testing.
Now they're on.
Look at
we on? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need a microphone. Just.
All right, Mike, you ready?
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and bring this workshop to order, or whatever we need to do.
Okay.
Start it.
Okay, all right. First of all, I'd like to thank the leadership group and the PNZ for coming a little bit early to the PNZ meeting tonight so that we can discuss the year. What I'd like to do at the beginning is just sort of briefly explain what the evaluation and appraisal report is, what the purpose of it is, and what the contents are. Essentially, what we talked about last month, but this is also for the benefit of the leadership group, who's probably a little bit less informed about what the year is and what the purpose is. First of all, what the evaluation and appraisal report is it's a summary audit of the effectiveness of your local, the city's or local government's comprehensive plan. It's required that every local government do a year every 7 years as required by the Department of Community Affairs. What we've sent to the Planning and Zoning Commission and what we linked to the leadership group is a preliminary draft of the year. We'll be, after the workshop tonight and after it's also being reviewed by other city departments, we'll take all of the comments and we'll bring it back again for the January meeting where the P&Z board will make their formal recommendation, and then we'll be taking it to City Council in February. The guiding principle behind the evaluation and appraisal report is the Ocala 2035 vision, which we brought up before at this board. That's the reason why we decided to do this joint meeting. You know, the purpose of the leadership group was to guide the city staff as well as our consultant in the creation of the Ocala 2035 vision to ensure that it truly is based on the community's wants and desires. And a key element to that wasn't just for them to do the plan and then move on with their life and let us, you know, implement the plan. They made it clear that they wanted to continue to be involved as this process moves forward. As a result, they will also continue to review not only the evaluation appraisal report, but also the subsequent comprehensive plan amendments that will result as a result of the year, and then ultimately the land development codes that will need to be changed as a result of the comp plan amendments. The year has been organized into 7 chapters. The first chapter is the introduction, which again goes through the purpose and the statutory requirements. The second chapter outlines the Ocala 2035 vision. It goes through every public hearing that we had and the results of the public hearings. It includes the 3 major issues that were first identified by staff but also discussed with the leadership group as well as with the city council. The 4th chapter is the community-wide assessment, and that's all of the demographic data that the city compiled to help us reach our conclusions with the year. It includes demographic data such as population, current population data, population projections, housing data, economic development data, as well as land use data. The next chapter, successes and shortcomings, as required by the state, we're required to go into each individual element of the year, each individual element of the comprehensive plan, and evaluate, you know, whether the city has met the policies that were created in the comprehensive plan. We then show where we have met those requirements and detail it out. We also show where maybe we didn't do what was in the comprehensive plan. It used to be that you had to go policy by policy, objective by objective. Now the state has made it a little bit more of an informal process, So it's really sort of a brief assessment of the different elements. The next chapter is state-required issues. We're required to, there are certain elements such as school facilities planning that the state, that the city's required to review as part of this process. The other areas include the urban infill and redevelopment area and the transportation concurrency exception area. The last chapter is where we go, we talk about all the relevant changes to growth management laws during the planning period and whether or not we've adopted those requirements, and if not, we state that those are things that will need to be adopted with the year-based amendments. The next page is the Ocala 2035 vision map. Again, this is one of the key documents that was created through the Ocala 2035 vision. What's shown on the plan is broken down into a couple of different categories. There's the urban form area, which highlights the proposed intensity of specific areas of the city. For example, the downtown area, that's your area of your highest intensity. That's the area where you're going to have the most mix of uses, whether it's residential, commercial, retail, park area. That's where you're going to have your tallest buildings and your most intensive buildings. Then you have your low-intensity areas, which are going to be your large lot single family your large lot single family residential subdivisions. It's also going to be commercial areas which are single use type commercial areas or single use industrial areas that are maybe one story. And then your medium low and medium high, those are elements along the continuum from the higher intensive areas to the lower intensive areas. We've also included in here a list of mobility corridors, list all of the major roadways within the city, and outlines what we're going to do in terms of analyzing these roadways to determine what's needed in order to make them complete streets. What I mean by complete streets are not only looking at the roadways in terms of providing vehicular uses, services, but also being able to provide for pedestrian, bike facilities, and transit facilities. Another element that you'll see in the vision map is the location of proposed off-street recreational trails. We tried to connect the recreational trails to existing residential developments, to retail areas, and to park areas, so that the trails won't just go and stop, but they'll actually be areas that connect the city. We've also shown in the blue gateways to the city. Those are areas that we really want to try to beautify, provide additional landscaping, signage requirements, those types of things, to try to highlight that you're entering into the city of Ocala. As I mentioned, we came up with three major issues for the city of Ocala, and those three issues are economic development, water use and conservation, and mobility and connectivity. In the economic development major issue section, we go into detail about the current economic conditions, the high unemployment rate in the city of Ocala, the fact that many of the job sectors that the city has a large percentage of our workforce in are areas that were heavily hit by the recession, and also that many of the jobs in Ocala are paying at a much lower rate than they are statewide. We propose some of the policies that we feel will help improve the economic situation in Ocala, and those include encouraging a mixed-use development pattern, capitalizing on the transportation and the logistical industrial sector, providing opportunities for small business and business accelerators, and improving educational attainment in the city and the surrounding area. Another major issue that was identified was water use and conservation. Now, of the three major issues, this was probably the one item that got the least amount of attention from whether it was with the leadership group or just with meeting with citizens. This is more of a technical issue, but the real key issue here is that based on requirements from the state, we'll no longer be able to utilize the aquifer for any additional water after the year 2027. So what that means is if you have an existing building you can continue to consume the water moving forward, even beyond 2027. But any new development in Ocala, they can no longer use the aquifer. So the city has to go in and look for alternative water supply sources, which we're currently going in and looking for. In addition, a big part of that, regardless of the source we come up with, it probably will not be able to provide as much water as we currently are able to get. So we are looking at conservation techniques. They include what the Water and Sewer Department has done in terms of requiring a tiered rate structure, where the more water you consume, the higher rate you have to pay. We've put together some educational programs to help people conserve water. We're trying to encourage the more reuse or reclaimed water, especially for irrigation purposes throughout the city. We're looking at ways to improve the amount of water accountability within the city system, and also looking at building and site design techniques, which will help conserve water. Now, the issue that probably got the most attention, or I think clearly got the most attention, with all of our discussion with the leadership group, as well as the public meetings that we had to do with mobility and connectivity. There was a real desire for people to try to encourage a shift from simply focusing on the use of the automobile to looking at providing opportunities to provide other forms of mobility, such as providing opportunities for more pedestrian access, bike, public transit, basically providing a city that would provide the opportunity for people to be able to live, walk, work, and recreate all in the same area without having to rely simply on the car. In addition to our discussions with the leadership group and the visioning process, that's also supported by the passage of Senate Bill 360, which occurred about a year ago, which removed the state mandated transportation concurrency requirements for dense urban land areas, which Ocala is considered a dense urban land area. So currently we're not under the same constraints that we used to be in terms of requiring transportation concurrency throughout the state, which is essentially anytime new development comes in, they have to show that there is concurrent facilities, which for Ocala, we've never really had a problem with water and sewer. It's always been the roadways. So what that's meant is that if a roadway is failing the level of service, then they're required to either add lanes to a roadway, change, you know, make improvements to intersection requirements. Now that we're no longer under those requirements, we can focus on other forms of mobility and looking at other ways to improve the mobility area without simply making improvements to improve behavioral capacity. Some of the techniques that we're looking at and that we've looked at through this process, as I mentioned before, are complete streets, which are looking at all the different modes of transportation along a roadway, and also road diets. We're gonna analyze the roadways to determine if there aren't roadways in the cities that wouldn't benefit from actually, you know, reducing the number of lanes or reducing the width of the lanes to, again, be able to offer some of the other modes of transportation. With that, I'd like to go real quickly on to next steps. As I mentioned before, we will be bringing this back to the Planning and Zoning Commission in January. Then it will be taken to City Council in February. And that is basically what would be approved at that point would just be a draft review. It will then be sent up to the state. They have 30 days to make any initial comments. That will come back to us. We can then, you know, make any changes to comply with DCA's requirements. We'll then bring it back to P&Z, and then back to Council for final adoption. Assuming that is then approved by DCA, the next step would then be getting into the year-based amendments, which basically what those are going to actually, or when we actually go into the comprehensive plan and make the amendments based on the recommendations that we finalize with the year. After we do the amendments to the year, the next step is then to come in and make amendments to the city's land development regulations, which we have an additional year to do that. With that, now I'd like to turn it over to the local leadership group and to the P&Z. Let me know if you have any questions or any comments, or if there was anything that you didn't agree with or thought there were any omissions that you'd like to discuss.
Anybody got anything? Paul, did you want to add anything to that or anything, or was just kind of like, you know, what you guys kind of like looked at and how you came to your conclusions and stuff on the Vision 2035 stuff?
Well, I'll be...
I'll be quite honest with you. We were sent the packet, and I breezed through it, knowing that the our leadership recommendations that were received from the community, with what Mike's presented and what the city's what they presented to you, and hopefully what goes to council, we're, in my opinion, and I'm hoping that the others back me up on this, we definitely like to stay involved throughout this process and make sure that the visioning plan, you know, comes to fruition. I know that there are potential developments and roadway diets that could be done that would improve the quality of life, and I think that the Vision 2035 should be the guide for folks like yourselves, for the commission, and I know you guys would come and go, you know, you're not going to be here permanently, but our leadership group would like to be there permanently to address council and P&Z so that we make sure that the plan is, you know, followed, and we could be a guide to help out and make sure that that does come to fruition. You know, we give the citizens of this community what they want. So.
What were the biggest things that they said they wanted? I mean, I know I went to a couple meetings, you know, but like, what were the real main issues that they kept bringing up?
I don't know if this comes from my bias, being that I'm an engineer, but just a lot of mixed use type things, and like Mike said, being able to walk to facilities and do your shopping, your recreational type activities. And also you're working in the same areas, and then providing, you know, what we try to do with what we got the feedback from was providing, you know, these community type businesses so people won't have to get in their cars and drive all the way across 200, you know, something in the neighborhood sense of it, on a neighborhood corner, where it, whether it be a doctor's office or some sort of small retail element, we kind of saw that, and then obviously the interconnectivity of parks or open spaces so people can actually get out and walk or bike. That's at least what I got. I believe in one of the workshops that we did at IHMC, I mean, hands down, everybody wanted to see to remove the barriers from the code so you can get creative with designs and setbacks and, you know, provide Ocala with something that other communities are doing that really provide a great atmosphere for you know, people that want to come to in the town or basically, you know, walk or live, play, work, all that stuff in the same area. And I think we could do a better job with our roadway system as far as making it more pleasant and kind of slowing traffic down. The trend has been to just slash through, cut all the trees down, and put in the roads, and next thing you know, you got a roadway that says 35 miles an hour, and people are driving 55, 60 miles an hour down it. So, I think we can improve on that with some road diets, and as we go through the future here in the city. Todd, anyone else want to add anything? Good.
Anybody up here? Got anything?
I'll just repeat what I mentioned before. I mean, y'all did a great job. I appreciate it, but. One thing that I thought may be a part of this, which now I can understand, I think after talking to Pete, that it'll come after this is all adopted and everything, but the code, like you said, is one of the biggest problems here, and the use-based code creates so many problems where we just have a smattering of different uses under each individual use or each individual designation. So hopefully that's something that if there's not detailed guidance in here, which I don't see. Hopefully, that's, you know, something that staff will address soon. And we don't need a timeline, but that. And then you know, we talk about mixed use, and everyone wants it. It seems that it's it appeals to everyone in the community. Everybody wants to see it until it's close. And hopefully we can address, when we do a code rewrite, we can address things that are the practical realities of mixed use. You know, we've heard a lot of dumpster pickup and mowing lawns at 5 a.m. and 4 a.m. And that's totally understandable. That's just, those are things that seem so small, but that we've got to address so that all of a sudden having a professional office or a small restaurant or boutique or whatever it's going to be doesn't seem like a looming monster if it's going to be around the corner. So, but y'all did a great job with this. Thank you.
Yeah. Getting back to the transportation type of stuff, and I don't know if you guys got to this point with community involvement, but, you know, like talking about road diets and things like that or beautifying some of these main thoroughfares, did you take that to the next step and ask people to kind of like, you know, if they would like to actually see like a road diet, or if they'd actually would like to see, you know, a median with some trees in it or something like that, or I mean, if that's something that would go over or
well, you know, from the public input and ourselves, I mean, we identified several roads like 17th Street, 441, 40, you know, 27 as well, and 40 going west. 40 going west has actually done a pretty good job with their median that they have there and the plantings they've put in, but obviously the dilemma we face is DOT.
Yeah.
You know, they're state roads, so we're going to have to try to somehow in the future work with DOT and figure out how we can, you know, provide these road diets. I know we have medians that are proposed along 17th. I think you guys are going to be looking at that. Because obviously businesses are affected too if he's put in this concrete median, and now we've got something on the visioning plan that shows, okay, this corridor can have more businesses, and then you come in and throw in these medians. I think if you place them properly, you know, businesses won't be affected that bad. But yeah, I mean, we've identified several roads. I mean, even roads that are, I think 35th Street came up, I brought it up, and it turned out to be a half-hour long conversation, which didn't need to be, but, you know, that's planned. The county's planning on doing it, but, you know, it might be a prime time example if we can kind of get with the county and maybe talk to them about our visioning process, which is what we've talked about and plan to do, go before the commissioners. That goes right through nothing but pretty much residential neighborhoods in the northeast area, and, you know, it would be great if we could, you know, modify that road to have these type of medians with the tree-lined streets and everything. But everybody builds to DOT standards. County does. You know, city's got DOT standards, and when you're looking at design guidelines, but we've got to try to move away from that and provide a safe road, but something that's also traffic calming and people aren't racing down the road. You want to drive down that road. I mean, especially if you get off of work and you're stressed out, you want to have a peaceful drive home or something. Yeah, it's just
funny because, you know, you look at a place like Fort King that kind of had the roundabouts and did all the stuff there with the street lights, and people just complaining about it.
Yeah, all the time. Well, you know, don't drive it, I guess, if you don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't mind now that I have a big car. You know, obviously you got to squeeze in there, but you know, I don't see a problem.
No, I don't either, but it's just that, you know, that mindset of getting people away from, you know, from thinking of way, certain things a certain way. You know, I mean, you gotta, like, if we did a road diet on 17th Street, for example, you know, I mean, obviously it's probably going to back up a little bit more.
But hopefully 31st Street alleviates some of that, and as it goes over, you know, the interstate, and I don't know when that's coming under construction, but, you know, bottom line, I mean, I hear too, Augie. I mean, you get people, and they're just naysayers in this town. It's like, well, you want to change it, or do you not? If you want change, show up to the meetings and state your case. Really, I mean.
Yeah. And we're at an important juncture too. I mean, you know, it's you know, I was talking with Mike earlier today. You know, it's like, you know, these changes, you know, with you know, changing some of these roadway systems and making them more pedestrian friendly or bike friendly, and you know, park connectivity and stuff like that, or mass transit systems. I mean, you know, it's going to be a major change to the city, and it's going to be tough to do because of the way the infrastructure is in place right now. I mean, 17th Street's a perfect example. I mean, you know, that corridor might completely change in the next 10 years from what it is right now. Not that you know, it should or it shouldn't, but, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's going to, you know, but I mean, it's going to be a major change. I mean, And unfortunately, there's nothing, there's no more space there to make it any wider. I mean, you know, if you want to do some of these things, you're going to have to probably do the diets.
I mean, time will tell what 31st Street does with the bypass, and I know we have our projections and stuff from traffic studies, but...
I already see a lot more traffic on. I use that road all the time, and there's a lot of traffic there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is good, but...
Yeah. Well, hopefully the natural progression things will lead people. You know, we begin with sprawl, we end up with traffic. Maybe people get mad enough that they'll decide to move downtown and walk to work and get what we're looking for in the long term.
Mm-hmm. That's the other thing, too. You know, it's like we also had the discussion about, you know, the making things pedestrian-friendly and bike-friendly. You know, it's like, that's great, but let's say you make 17th Street pedestrian-friendly, bike-friendly. You still got to get there, you know. I mean, you're not going to drive over there and then start riding your bike or start walking. I mean, you're going to have it pedestrian friendly from your house or whatever to get to that place too, you know. So it's going to, you know, a massive overhaul of the whole, you know, system.
Yeah, go ahead.
With regard to that, part of the, if you look at the connectivity and mobility in the plan, you'll see that that was one of the goals: provide park connectivity within what, quarter mile of anyone's home. And then between those parks, you have pedestrian and bike-type options to get to roads like 17th Street,
right,
et cetera. And then the other thing that I think is important to remember, we didn't tell people, here are all the hurdles.
No,
because they brought it up. And what we were instructed to do by VHB Millersohn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was say, forget about financial hurdles. Forget about, you know, existing in place problems with engineering. You know, Paul can worry about that later. Do you want to see? What would be ideal for you?
Right.
So when you look at it, you know, it was kind of easy to say that's what we want to see, to forget about any hurdles.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of telling Mike. It was almost kind of like a wish list of how you'd like, you know, is it feasible or not? I don't know, but, you know.
Yeah, we don't want this to just sit on the shelf and be done. I mean, now we're going to have a changing of the guard. Ricky Horst did a whole bunch, and he's leaving now, and I'm just curious to see how this whole transition is going to take place. And definitely don't want to just sit on the shelf, because, you know, I've lived here since 1985. I see a lot of potential, and, you know, believe me, I've heard from lots of people from all walks of life. You know, people say that Ocala needs this, Ocala needs that. Well, hopefully we can get it in, and people will support it.
Right.
And part of the feasibility issue will be addressed as part of the year-based amendments, especially when we start talking about things like road diets. What we want to do is we want to be able to go in and analyze the roadways to determine if a road diet would work in certain areas. You know, Paolo brought up the issue of 35th Street, and, you know, we spent 30 minutes just talking about whether or not that roadway should be widened or not. And we didn't want the vision to get bogged down on an issue like that. We wanted the vision to just be a general overview of what people wanted. But once we get into the year-based amendments, you know, as we keep going, we're going to go from the general to the more specific. So at that point, we will have to, you know, we'll have to come up with the road detail and determine whether or not this roadway should be go on a diet or if this roadway should stay at four lanes, but maybe we add the bike lanes or something like that. So that will come, but it will be as part of the amendment process.
Yes, anybody?
No, but getting back to the what you're talking about with the, I just got an article today a report. I guess it was an article: suburbs lose office workers to business districts. So that kind of goes with what y'all are saying, them being a little bit more of a concentration, things moving into the interior of the city. But as far as Graywater goes, when we're going to be talking about water management district a little bit later, with these landscape medians, landscape roadways, is the irrigation for all those roadways, those are all provided by the water reclamation facilities, or are they irrigated generally?
Usually they're irrigated. It depends. Some of them, I mean, right now we basically only have three water meters in the city that use reuse. So most of them are not utilizing reuse, certainly to the extent that we need to. So that's one of the main issues that we've worked with the Water and Sewer Department about, you know, especially where it's feasible that we could do reuse, we really need to start trying to capitalize on that more.
Yeah, I mean, if you were going to be moving or looking at some of these road diets where you were going to be installing some landscaping and irrigation, I mean, that would maybe be an opportunity to extend some of these gray water lines that would maybe ultimately make it more feasible for existing subdivisions, to maybe tap into them. I mean, wouldn't that be correct?
Certainly, it would be. And the other thing that would do is, you know, it would also extend the reuse so that as new development comes in, they could also connect. And that's one of the issues is somebody comes in, we say, hey, you want to use reuse, but, you know, the reuse plant, the only place you get reuse is, you know, halfway across town. The more reuse we can get in, then the more opportunities it is for other developments to be able to utilize it. So that's certainly something that we'll look at as part of the process.
Also, Mr. Gibney, on when you asked about the roadways, sometimes, like on the State Road 40 downtown, that little section that was just done, that has temporary irrigation so that it's just there during the establishment period. And then it's not irrigated after that. So it just depends on the plant materials that you use.
And I mean, probably comes up in the code requirement as you're rewriting that. I mean, you can always just specify Florida-friendly landscaping, which is what the county did with their whole Springs Protection Ordinance, so that, like Dorothy said, it's only a temporary setup, and then after maybe a year or two, you're not using the irrigation anymore. So.
Yeah, I was just thinking of it as more of an opportunity to bring it to existing areas, you know, older, more established neighborhoods that, you know, use quite a bit of city water for irrigation. I mean, that's going to be a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. We need a big reservoir.
Design it.
Take it. I'll work on
take
it.
Take the initiative.
Hey, you know, I've recommended that many a time. But no, actually, I was going to work on a couple where, you know, people build ponds and they don't dry out like they're supposed to in 14 days. So what do? Well, the Water Management District's got a criteria that's called stormwater reuse pond, where you can put in a pump and you pump out your water and disperse it as irrigation, and then you can use that for your treatment volume recovery that they're looking for to treat the water. So that's coming. I mean, as soon as also the state passes their new legislation on the pollutants, all that stuff's going to come to fruition here. You'll be seeing different things. I'm sure we'll see rain barrels and all sorts of things for stormwater reuse.
Crazy question. Was there anything that the public brought up that they didn't want to see happen to the city? I mean, just, you know.
Don't raise taxes.
Well, yeah, but, well, that
to pay for any of it.
Not really.
Some are dealt with the youngins, so I don't know what they had to say.
I think there's nobody talks about anything really negative. They mainly talked about wanting to just see more things happen here, and I think what we talked about, the mixed use, they really talked about wanting to see downtown develop and have places to go and things to do. So how would that happen? That would make them happy.
Would they live down there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. As long as it's cool.
In the right price.
And affordable.
Hip, trendy, and cheap.
Hip, trendy, and cheap.
Actually, I think that was probably the most negative. It was affordable. A lot of people felt like of things that happened were not affordable to either to a young professional who's just starting out.
It's true.
Hip and trendy typically aren't part of that.
Hip, trendy, and cheap.
Yeah.
You got anything else, Mike?
No. I mean, was there anything specific in the year document itself that you had any questions about, or any sections? Did everything pretty much make sense to everybody and saw where we were coming from? And I mean, as long as that's the case, then what we'll do is we'll pretty much. Now, like I said before, we will make some tweaks based on what some of the other department staff have in terms of comments, and we'll take another look at it, make sure that, you know, we feel like we're meeting all the requirements from the state and certainly from the leadership group. But other than that, we'll, you know, we won't change a whole lot then based on the workshop, and then we'll, you know, we'll just kind of move forward and bring it back in January.
What, is there like a timeline, like, I mean, let's say we just want to, you know, read over it one more time and, you know, see something, I mean,
well,
how much longer will we have to, like, call you and say, listen, you know, I just saw this in here, you know, what do you...
Well, that was the thing. Initially, remember, we were trying to set it up for last week.
Yeah.
The reason we were going to do that, I mean, initially it was going to be we were going to do them both on the same night, and then we were going to do it last week. The reason we were doing that is we were trying to rush so that we could get it to council in January, because our deadline is April 1st to get it adopted with the state.
Right.
But, you know, we discussed it from a staff standpoint. The penalty if you don't adopt it by April 1st is that you can't do any large-scale land use amendments until, you know, it's adopted. Well, currently, and I don't know if this has changed in the last week or so, we haven't gotten any applications for large-scale.
Really?
And if we do get them, we may still get them, but if we get them, we're planning on having one cycle, and the cycle's going to be in July. So, really, there really is no penalty if we don't get this completed in April or the end of April or the beginning of May. So, you know, that's why we basically pushed the workshop back to the 13th. Right. So I don't think that the deadline is critical. At the same time, you know, obviously we want to...
No, I know, but just based on the current schedule you have for bringing it back to us in January and everything, I mean, you know, I mean...
Oh, okay.
I mean, just say, like, next week if we, I mean, you know...
Yeah, if you could get it to me by, yeah, the end of next week.
End of next week?
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying I'm going to have anything, but, you know, I'm just curious.
Yeah, that should be funny.
I'm really going to read it now.
Keep in mind, back to, you know, kind of where the confluence of Mike's comments and Rob's comments is, you know, this is the base phase. We move in and get more and more focused on things like land use and zoning changes, and the intent is, we know, to reduce the number of land use districts and the number of zoning districts and to accommodate mixed use as much as we can, where we can, and along the way to make sure financial feasibility and ultimately end up with a new code.
Right. One other comment I'd like to make is that we're trying to finalize the scope of services with VHB Millish Allen for the next fiscal year. And that will actually probably go to council on December 21st, so we'll have a better idea at that point. But what we're talking about is, you know, I mentioned on my next steps that, you know, we have 18 months to do year-based amendments. What we've been talking about with them is to actually try to capitalize on the momentum we've gotten through the visioning process, and especially with the land use, future land use element, try to hit that immediately, and possibly, if we do have the large-scale cycle of July, have the land use element for the year-based amendment taken for that July large-scale cycle. So we'd get into mobility in terms of the mobility plan, but what we'd start with would be the future land use, and that would set the table. So probably, or at least there's a chance that we would try to get that done within the next 6 months, seven months, and then move forward with the amendments, all the other elements, the following year.
Okay. Andy, you got anything to add to this?
I do not. And again, I apologize for being late, but
you should.
I know. I don't know what committees I got appointed to while I was absent. That's usually what happens.
But you're the chair of all of them.
You know, whatever it is. But no, I do not have any questions.
All right. Nobody else? Fred Roberts, anything? Back to your texting diligently.
One never stops. I'd be here.
Who's the new offensive coordinator? Is that what
Kirby Smart.
Defensive coordinator?
That would be something.
We're hearing Kirby Smart.
If he was the offensive coordinator, that would be something.
Defensive coordinator. Oh.
All right, but I guess that's it. Nobody's got anything else? So we'll officially adjourn.
Yeah,
is that official yet?
Apple White. Kirby Smart was being pretty heavily tossed around South Bend as defensive coordinator.
I thought ESPN was...